This is Genatzet Hayer,
a toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian, a comprehensive look at the Armenian culture, only on the Ignotainment Media Network.
Genatzet Hayer, Pailuis Inchpesek. Hey, Chris, you know what? We had that big show maybe a couple weeks back that the whole news was about. We had the activists in Armenia that were protesting about the gas and so forth.
Yep.
Well, just the other day, Russia, check this out, my friends, Russia has legalized the reduced price for natural gas. I'm sorry, gas, I'm sorry. Grass. Yeah, they should tax us on grass, too.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, no kidding. But Russia has legalized the reduced price for natural gas, which Armenia will purchase at the border at the price of $165 per 1,000 cubic meters, which is a big drop here. And I think...
that's a huge drop.
Yeah, Russia confirms this, and it's big news for Armenia. And hopefully... things are going to get a little bit better there in Armenia with the natural gas situation, especially right around the corner with winter popping up.
That's great. That's a huge win.
Yes, sir. Hey, Chris, what a great show we had last week. Hey, we've been having a great show every week, actually.
It has been. Really, really string of good shows.
With Saroj, that was an unbelievable show.
Extremely talented guy.
Yeah. I hope he enjoyed the show. But it doesn't stop there, my friends. We got a great show coming up here. Big guest here, Armenian guest that's a big-time actor here that I really like his stuff. He was in The Men Who Stare at Goats. Do you remember that movie?
I do remember that movie.
That was one of my favorite movies.
It was a really good movie, yeah.
That one right there in The Kingdom.
Yeah, oh, I'm very familiar.
You can't go wrong with The Kingdom. He was in that. That one as well. Series episode with 24.
Oh, I love 24.
24 was great. Homeland
is...
That was one of your favorites, wasn't it?
It's one of my all-time favorite shows of all time, Homeland and The Sopranos. So.
Well, the list goes on and on here, my friends. We've got Harach Titizyan. How are you, my friend?
Hey, guys. I'm well, and how are you guys?
Not bad at all. And we're so happy to have you on our show. Thank you for being on our show here, and we got so many questions, but let's start off with the basic. Where are you from? Are you from L.A. right now when we're talking to you?
Yeah, I'm from L.A., born and raised, I grew up out here. I've never moved.
Are you first generation, second generation, or...?
First generation.
Yeah,
my father is from Lebanon, and my mother's from Jordan.
Really? Yeah, well, you know what? I'm from
Lebanon,
too.
Yeah, you are. So I was going to say. So is Jono.
Growing up, how did you get involved in all these great stuff that you're involved in right now? I mean, how did you get involved in acting?
Well, you know, I was always a pretty adventurous kid, and... I would do I would sing and do imitations and that kind of thing. So whenever we had guests at the house, my parents always kind of put me up there, you know, after dinner and had me basically entertain them. So it was kind of always in me. And then, of course, when I was 19 years old, I decided that I wanted to be an actor. And my parents weren't very happy, obviously, being, you know, old school Armenians. You know, it worked out. I kind of didn't really listen to them, and I did it anyways, and it's been doing it since.
And I could probably see that, too, because they want you to go to school, get that education, and be a big doctor, lawyer, that type of stuff. I could see the Armenian people doing that for sure. So
yeah, of course. But it's just funny how, the one thing that they push you to do when you're younger, and you decide that you want to continue doing it, all of a sudden it's no good.
Yeah. Did you, when you got older, did you say, you know what, maybe acting school is around the corner for me as well? I mean, did you get involved in any art schools?
I did. What happened was I took a little class local that wasn't too far from me, but then it was a little limiting. So I went to a place called the Beverly Hills Playhouse for about 4 years, from when I was 20 until 24. And that was a pretty, kind of a, it took up a lot of the time. So I was actually, I dropped out of college to go to acting classes, but I hadn't told my parents. I was doing that for a while, but they finally found out, and it wasn't pretty, to say the least.
Are you familiar with that place, Chris?
I am. Yeah, I'm very familiar with it. Yeah, I know exactly where it is.
Really?
Yep.
Really? Great. Were there other Armenians that were part of this establishment as well, trying to get their first acting career going as well?
Not too many. I mean, there was maybe randomly like one, and I think another one came down the road. But no, it was primarily not. There weren't really any Armenians. So I associated primarily with non-Armenians, and you know, I made really good friends, and I kind of involuntarily distanced myself from the Armenian community because what I was putting all my time into. I didn't really have access.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And plus the Armenian community, you know, they're like, you know what? We're not familiar with what he's doing. I mean, really, you're doing this something that they're not really familiar with. So you're taking on a kind of like a left turn on this. Do you think that it's harder for Armenians to get something like this going in their life and their future and so forth to find movie scripts and so forth like that? I mean, are there agencies for Armenians out there?
I don't think there are any agencies specifically for Armenians. There are agencies that specialize in certain types. And that's actually part of the problem is because, with the business, the way it is they want to kind of put you in a category. So especially, like for me, I never changed my name. And so my name is very ethnic, obviously. So,
right.
It was, especially when I had first started, I was very hard. It was a lot harder for me to get in for roles that were not ethnic, you know, because, you know, they see your name and they're like, oh, you know, put them in that category.
And that category, so, are you talking more like, well, I got to tell you, I mean, the roles that you play are mostly the bad guys role, the terrorist.
Exactly. And that's what I mean when I say it's unfortunate because sometimes, unless you build up a certain body of work, which I've pretty much done, and it's easier for me to break down those roles right now. But, you know, especially in the beginning, you're just trying to build credit, so you want to do everything. But, you know, if you don't have credits and you know, you're an ethnic guy, unfortunately, with the way the business is there aren't too many. I mean, it's changed a little bit, but there aren't too many like redeeming roles with redeeming qualities or like good guy roles, whatever that are, you know, ethnic, especially like in the Middle East, you know, in that area, it's like we're all terrorists. We're all, you know,
that's sad too. That really is sad. And that's because you think that, you know, maybe I didn't change my name to what they wanted or something like that to, you think that had some role to do with it as well, or what's your thoughts?
I'm sure. Yeah, I think name goes a long way, especially when, like, for example, if the casting office isn't really familiar with you, and you know, my agent, my manager is trying to pitch me. I mean, they see my name and automatically, with you know, it's a kind of a first impression is okay, ethnic. You know,
right.
So he's not going to be the lead of the show or the lead of the film. You know, I mean, realistically, how many shows or films or anything have you seen where you know, the lead or even the first, like, three or four leads are, you know, Armenian or Middle Eastern or, you know brown.
That is a very good point that he's making, Chris, because you guys know that one Mexican guy, I think his first name's Danny, and they always got him, like, he's always that...
Rayo.
Is that his?
Yeah, I think, yeah.
And every movie that he's been a part of, they've always had him like the villain guy, you know?
Yeah, like in The Cartel or something. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. You know the one I'm talking about, Hirach?
Yeah, Danny Trejo?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And, when
I
you
know,
were saying
yeah,
that...
They finally gave him... They finally did give him a lead when he did that... I forgot what it was called. He did like some like thriller, like a... what was it?
No,
it
he's
came out
right.
About,
yeah.
Like, I want to say 3 or 4 years ago, where he like got to kiss like Jessica Alba. That was a big thing.
Nice. Yeah. It's worth the wait.
I think it was
well worth the wait.
I'm,
then
I'm trying to think of it. It was God. What was it? I don't know the name.
You know
of
what?
It.
I
actually
look it yeah, up. Yeah. I think you're right on that because I did see some movie like that a couple years back. It was too. So
yeah. Yeah, so but then again, that was, you know,
Machete.
It was its own thing, independent. It wasn't like a studio-backed film, so it was, you know, the studios are a lot more narrow-minded when it comes to casting, you know, that kind of thing. They probably wouldn't put him as the lead, you know.
Right,
you
know, so. Right. Chris, you got the movie?
Machete.
Machete.
Yeah, he was a
Machete, exactly.
Yeah, he was a former federale.
Wow. You had a question for Harash, didn't you?
Yeah, no, I was interested, like, especially on you know, on like a Homeland or shows in that realm. Is there anyone who's like, you know, consistently on set who like is acting as a consultant who's, you know, former CIA or like has worked in some intelligence capacity,
special forces or something like that,
like to consult on the script and you know how stuff actually happens?
Yes, no, definitely. First off, like one of the writers on that show was used like ex CIA. One had a sister who was CIA, so she had the female's perspective of it, you know, with Carrie's character. So they all kind of have from their own backgrounds, but also, yeah, they definitely have consultants with not only that stuff, also with, like, for example, the Middle Eastern stuff. So, you know, when you see a scene where Brody, the character of Brody, is like praying, you know, on his knees, you know, that's all been. They've done their research and they have consultants that tell them, okay, this is what he would do if he's really Muslim, this is what he would do, you know, that kind of thing. So they're not just making it up, they're definitely doing their research.
Wow, that's interesting.
Really interesting. How restricted, and you know, I don't want to jump in here, but how restricted is like your access to the scripts and stuff? Like how long, like if you're going in to shoot, how long before you shoot do you get access to that script? Because I know with shows like Homeland and with Game of Thrones and some of these other huge shows where everyone wants to know what's
going
to happen next. It's everything's held so close to the vest, even with from other actors that I know who I've had discussions with who were on the show. Like I literally have no idea what's going to happen until I show up to shoot.
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe not that accurate, but yeah, it's basically within a week, I would say. But even then, leading to the day of the shoot, they are making changes. So, you know, they just kind of make changes as they go. And you might have more lines or less lines or no lines, or they might have cut you out or, you know, whatever it is. But, yeah, it's, you know, they have an idea of where they're going, but definitely things change.
And you were on 15 episodes on that show, weren't you?
I did, yeah. I did the first two seasons. I'm not on it anymore, but I did the first two seasons. Yeah, it was fun. It was a great time. We shot it in Charlotte, North Carolina, and made some good friends, and yeah, it was a great time.
That's cool. Did they kill you? They killed you off on the show, right?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, the thing is, I to be honest with you, I wasn't even sure if they if they had killed me or not, because they never mentioned that I died. They never showed me dying. They just kind of like stopped showing me. But then there was that bomb blast, you know. So I think the assumption is that I was in that building, but, you know, it's never really been talked about. But then again, for a show like that, the creators are really, really smart. So what they like to do is they like to keep their options open. So, like, I'm not saying I'll be back there or anything, but you know, they don't necessarily like to make definite decisions in case they do want to bring a character back or something that they haven't shot themselves in the foot.
No, that's great. Then the option's still out there. Now, I was wanting to ask you this, too. When they do kill someone off, do they sit them down before the show or during the script time when they're writing it out, or like in football in the NFL, they put a yellow tag on the locker room saying, "Come to the office, we need to talk to you." How do they do it in the acting world on these type of series?
Yeah, it is something like that, especially when you're somewhat a part of the family where you're doing multiple episodes and it's not just a one or two episode kind of thing. With those, they probably wouldn't, you know, you kind of see it coming. But with something like with mine, you know, in fact, they actually had planned on killing me earlier than when I did leave. So there was an episode where there was like a shootout in a bookstore. Or not a bookstore, it was like some kind of, yeah, I think it was a bookstore. But either way, there was a shootout. And I get shot, and I was actually supposed to die initially, but then they kind of changed their minds and they decided to keep me around for a little longer. But for something like that, they actually, when they had planned on killing me, the creator called me, and basically just kind of gave me a heads up. Listen, just so you know, this was going to happen, and you know, we loved working with you. You've been great, but you know, whatever. I mean, story comes first in the end. So it was something that they felt they had to do at that time. But yeah, I definitely got a call and was very considerate, and it wasn't like cold at all.
That is rough, you know, after you've worked with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So do they give you like a week notice or something on this, or a couple weeks, or how do they do
basically,
that?
Basically, yeah, I think it was like, as far as I remember, it was like the episode before the actual episode where I was supposed to die. So yeah, it was a good week and a half, something like that.
Okay. All right. Well,
they were really great. I mean, they were super gracious, and they were awesome. I mean, in the end, you know, people have to die in shows, you know. So,
oh, sure.
It's tough for actors to not take that personally, because you think like, oh, what if they didn't like me, or what if my acting is no good or whatever. But, you know, I mean, unless you're super difficult, it's usually the case is that they just have to move the story forward and whatever they have to do to make the story go, you know.
Hirach, it's a real action series too, like with 24 as well. Did you guys use any? Did they use any stuntmen for you guys as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, in fact, it's a rule with the Screen Actors Guild, unless you're also a stunt guy, but they prefer certain things. You need to have a stunt guy come in. So yeah, it depends on the scene, of course. But if there's a lot of like fighting or falling or that kind of thing, shooting out, you know, usually they get a stunt guy.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So what's your next game plan? Do you have anything on the works coming up, or are you just laying low right now looking for a nice script coming around the corner?
A little bit of both. I'm auditioning. I'm kind of up for something right now, but I'm also producing a film. I'm producing a feature film that we shoot in December. So that's kind of taking up a lot of my time. We're trying to, you know, lock down the locations and cast a couple of the names that we're trying to get. So yeah, I'm in the process of that right now. It was actually a short film that we did that won a bunch of awards and was really great. And we got the funding to do the feature. So that's keeping me busy at the moment.
Well, that's excellent. That's excellent. That brings me to my next question. If you had a choice, all right, now I'm just throwing this at you right now. If you had a choice between like a big time movie or big time series where you were starring in one of these two, which one would you roll with?
Yeah, that's a good question. If you asked me this 6 years ago, I'd probably say a movie. But the game has changed so much that TV is a lot more secure, and it's kind of like there's a regular paycheck, if that makes sense. And you know, it is, you know, with a movie, it's like a one and done, and if it flops, it flops. You know what I mean? And you kind of go down in value as far as your name value goes. But probably right now it'd be a series, to be honest with you.
Okay.
And I love theater too. I've done a lot of theater as well, which there's things I love about that. But I think in the end, a great series would trump everything.
Well, you know what? I just lost lunch to my partner here because we were coming up with the questions and so forth, and I said, you know what, what do you think he'd say on that one? And he says series. I go,
actually, I think the answer that I gave was, if I were thinking I was answering for him, I would say, well, if you were asking me the same question
right,
5 years ago, I would probably have said a movie. But now, because of the, you know, the grand scale of so many series and the popularity that they're getting, I would say series. It was literally almost exactly your answer. Oh. So I'm very proud of myself right now.
Hirach, you should have seen the big smile across the table right now.
You see all these big actors, you know, from film, movie actors, and they're doing series right now because the money's just better, you know, and it's more secure. I mean, right now, if I worked on a TV show for a week, I'd make more money than if I worked on a movie for a week.
What do you think, you know, though? Do you think the movies are down right now? People are not going out watching movies anymore? Or what's going on with that? You think Netflix might have hurt the movie theater a little bit as well?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of that. But also, what's happening is because technology's gotten so great and we have these big screen TVs in our homes with surround sound and all that, I mean, you know, your whole family could watch a movie for practically nothing. Where if you went to the theater, when you have a family of four or five people, you're spending $100.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
There's no question about it.
Which is why they're doing all the extra stuff like the 3D and all this IMAX, because they're trying to come up with stuff that you don't necessarily have at home. You know, I mean, they even have those concepts of like the movie theater seats that like shake and make noise and all that stuff. You know.
Well, I tell you what, it's just, last week we went to a movie, and it was one of these, the chairs reclined back, that there was a waitress that comes in there, gets our order for food and everything. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe that they're doing this at a movie theater. You just press a button, and they're coming out with chicken strips and so forth. It was unbelievable. But
definitely. They're just thinking of ways of getting in the theater as opposed to staying home and watching a movie there, you know.
Right.
And it's smart, you know, they got to kind of be ahead of the game and see what else. But, yeah, I think the movies are suffering at the theaters at least.
Yeah. Now, have you done any work in Armenia?
I have not. I've never been to Armenia. I've always wanted to go, but haven't had the opportunity. I've been asked to do stuff there that kind of fell through, that nothing's ever really stuck. I've been asked to do a lot of stuff for, like, Armenian here, like U.S. Armenia, like TV series and stuff like that. But to be honest with you, it's not really my cup of tea. And the money is just not there for me to do, you know.
I tell you what, it's good. One day when an opportunity pops up, though, I think that maybe down the line you might be interested in something like that. But right now it seems like you really want to get some sort of real good foundation going in L.A. What's this the script that you're producing now? Is it an action type of basis, or what's that one about?
No, it's actually it's like a dark comedy. So it's it's like a slice of life film, but it's basically about this guy who his dream has always been to be like a dancer, you know, and he does dance competitions in his hometown, Rancho Cucamonga, which is like, you know, in the middle of nowhere. But he basically it's a dance competition between him and his brother and an opposing team, which is two brothers. And I'm one of the guys in the opposing team, which are the Prussian brothers. You know, they're like these Russian guys. And, it's really fun and it's funny, but it's all played for real. And it's the thing is, they take it so seriously, but they're just not good dancers, and that's kind of where the comedy is, because they're just not good. But that's their passion, you know.
Right. It sounds good, because I keep seeing two guys that can't really dance, and they think they could dance, right?
Yeah, totally. And you know, maybe in Rancho Cucamonga, like, they can kind of hang, but if they were to come out to, like, L.A. or New York or something, they would just be a joke, you know what I mean?
Right.
but they just, like, that's their dream, you know, and it's just sad.
They would probably...
Yeah, it is funny.
They would probably be stars in the Midwest here. We would think that's probably good dancing, so... in any case, I tell you what, Hirach, you got to come back on and let us know when... this is going to be out, and we'd love to have our people know about it and go out to. What do you think it's going to be? Some sort of festivals or special screenings?
Yeah, definitely. It'll definitely be in festivals all around. The short film did really well, and that's why we're doing this. So it'll definitely be around, and I'll keep you guys posted for sure.
Oh, definitely. Thank you very much, man. It's been great having you on our show, and Chris has still got a. A goofy smile about what you were going to say.
I'm pretty proud of that, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. So I owe him lunch on that one. But, Hirach, have you ever thought about maybe getting into the theater? I mean, you brought that up. How serious were you about doing the theater work and so forth, like as plays and so forth? Have you been involved in anything like that?
Yeah, I have. You know, I actually used to own a theater in Hollywood. I ran that for 6 years, and I did a lot of plays there. But I got involved with a great production called Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo.
Wow!
That we did at the Kirk Douglas Theater here in L.A. And then a year later, it went to the Mark Taper Forum, which was like double the size in L.A. as well. And then a year after that, they moved us to Broadway. So I did that for 6 months on Broadway. And they cast Robin Williams as one of the leads. So
Robin Williams.
Yeah, I got to be on stage. Yeah, I got to be on stage every day with Robin Williams. It was great.
How was he, man? I mean, we knew that he was battling depression and all that. Were there any signs that you seen him sitting alone or anything like that that you thought, you know what, the guy don't, you know, he's depressed or anything like that? Did he give anything off is what I'm saying?
Yes and no. I mean, the first day, you know, when we first met him in rehearsals, you know, he was always on. He was like the Robin Williams that we see in interviews, and he's always like, you know,
jumping around
jokes and being funny. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and then, you know, the second day was a little less of that. Third day. So by the fourth day, he was just the Robin Williams that I got to know. So he was, you know, super kind of, not to himself, but he was very quiet, soft-spoken, really sensitive guy. And when we would have a real conversation, it would just be very sincere, you know, none of those added jokes or nothing like that. So, but as far as can I sense if he was depressed, I mean, it wouldn't have been past me, you know, like I would have believed it, but it wasn't like I pointed out and said, oh my God, that guy's got issues. No, it wasn't like that at all. But yeah, he's definitely, he was a different person than the guy we saw in interviews. That's for sure.
Now going back to your experience doing this as well, I got to ask you, I've asked my past guest on this one. How do you rate doing that type of live work instead of the series or movies and so forth? Is it up there? Is it below that? Or how do you feel with that one?
You know, in certain aspects, I think it's better because you get that initial audience reaction, you know, and whether it's a laugh or it's, you know, you can sense the quiet in the room and it's a dramatic or whatever it is, there's no feeling like that. You don't get that in TV or film. But the thing I don't like about theater is the repetition aspect, because, you know, you're doing a show for, you know, eight times a week.
Same thing.
Months.
Yeah, it's like Groundhog Day. Like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's like the same lines over and over. I mean, there were points where I'm, you know, on stage in front of 1,400 people, and I'm saying my lines, and I'm thinking about what I'm going to do afterwards, what I'm going to have for lunch tomorrow. I'm like almost on autopilot. And
right.
It's a terrible place to be, but it's like, you know, it's just a repetition kind of, it does that to you. So that's the part I don't like about it.
Well, then,
but
there's
other than that, I love being on stage.
There's got to be an aspect to that too, that one night you're just like, you know what, this part that I normally do like this, I'm going to throw a little twist and a little bit more enthusiasm when I do this. Or did that ever pop up too?
Yeah, definitely. We always thought of like new ways to kind of make it fresh and make it different. And I mean, it got to a while too where we even like make like inside jokes, like on stage we would like kind of like, you know, when our faces weren't facing the audience, we'd make a face at the other actor, kind of goof around in our own way without making it noticeable to
right,
the audience.
Right, right.
So you just kind of have to, otherwise, you know, you just go crazy.
Right. I appreciate you being on our show, Hirach, and let us know if there's anything we could do for you. We're here for you, my man.
Of course. Thank you, guys. I appreciate your time, and thanks for having me.
All right, man.
Take care, Hirach. Wow, what a great show again.
Man,
great
guest.
Yeah, you can't go wrong with all these great guests we're having.
And I love all the stuff he's been in, so it's even better.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what? I got our old buddy here who's been on our show here, Roger Kapelian. Yeah. Roger, how are you?
I am doing great, and I'm really happy to be back on. How are you guys doing?
Not bad at
all.
Wonderful. Wow, I didn't know Roger was going to be on. This is great.
It's a little surprise.
Hey, Roger.
Yeah, for me too.
Sorry about that.
Roger, yeah. I heard that we're going to have a contest here. It's about time we had a good contest here too. And what I like to do is have you explain to our people out there, our Armenians, Yechpires, and our Kurdiks out there, to let them know about what we got going. Fill us in on it.
Yeah, I think our people need a good contest right now. I think we're in dire need. So let's do this. You know, I did the first graphic novel, which is pretty much, as you know, it's like a pretty much a comic book, but a serious one about Armenian history,
right.
War Gods.
Sure.
And, you know,
excellent book, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah, I worked really hard at it with my team. So, and, you know, I'm doing the second book, which is Warrior Saints, which takes place 150 years later, dealing with the Vartan battle against the Persians.
Right.
The first book obviously dealt with the Christianization of Armenia, King Dertad, you know, and Gregory the Illuminator. So what I'm doing is, I thought, you know, we talked about doing a cool contest where I'm doing 100 different covers, unique, separate covers for the second book,
right,
because it's a way to raise money. Now, you know, I'm charging $150 for each unique collector's edition of the second book. And once they're gone, they're gone. I'm not going to do any more of those.
Mm-hmm.
And then what will happen is the, you know, we'll vote on the best cover, and that's going to end up being the cover, right, of the mass printing of the second book. And we're going to be doing a Kickstarter pretty soon. The reason we're doing a contest is, I think it'd be a cool idea if some of your listeners, I'm sure, have traveled to Armenia, they've traveled to Western Armenia, which is Turkey, occupied Armenia, ha ha ha, and they have some really cool photos that they've taken, and those are historic or landscape photos, you know, of the deals pretty much with the environment where, you know, my stories take place. I'd love to use those images, and we can do a contest where two people win. I use their photos that they've taken, and they give us permission, and I can use those to create a cool, like, battle scene or, you know, like a castle scene or something from Armenian history using the photos they took. And the winners get a copy of the first volume, War Gods. And I use their image as, on the cover of the second one. So
Do they somewhere get a credit in the back that it was their picture or something like that? Or
absolutely.
How
absolutely.
Cool is they that, guys?
That back, is really cool.
You know, they get on Facebook. You know, we use their photo. Like, here's a person who took this photo. It has to be their photo. They have to have taken it. They have full rights to it.
Okay.
We can't use someone else's photo, and it can't be something off Google. It's got to be their photo. And it's got to be high enough resolution that I can create a cool image from it.
And
I do, like Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. So that's the kind of thing we're going to do, but with Armenian history.
And it's probably not the type of picture that, hey guys, it's not. I don't think it's a selfie where the background is a mountain and your big face is right in front of it too, right?
Yeah,
that's not going to work either. You want just a landscape picture, something like that. You really would rather have not people in it. Right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it could just a landscape picture. The people in it are very small. It's mostly landscape.
Wow.
Sometimes people shoot cool panoramics. It has to be a pretty high resolution, you know, kind of like a larger image, like the kind you take with one of the newer iPhones, that kind of thing, or a good camera, digital camera.
This is really ideal for people that are in Armenia, because if you're in America or Argentina or other places, I guess we're kind of out of luck on this one, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, but let's put it this way. What if they took the photo and it kind of looks like something that would appear in Armenia? Fine, you know?
Wow.
I mean, you win. We choose your image. You win a book, and I get to put it on one of the covers, a special coverage. Now, you don't get that special cover. Maybe you can have one of your friends buy it. But,
right.
You know, those special cover issues are going to help me publish my next book. And this is what we're doing. This is a grassroots
thing. And your name's going to be in it. It's unbelievable. In the back.
Yeah, of course.
How could you go?
Your name's going to be in it.
How could you go wrong? Your name's in this book.
Yeah,
and you get a...
And the artist that did the Lord of the Rings, Mordor, the original one, gets to use your image to create a cool... historic, awesome landscape that probably has a battle scene in it or Vartan on the cover or something, you know. It'll be really a lot of fun. And obviously, we reserve the right to choose the one that actually fits the best. And it's a contest, after all.
This contest, I think you're making us the exclusive on this contest?
Absolutely. Nowhere else.
Oh, my God.
Just you guys. And this is a good...
How
can you go wrong? This is happening right away, and it leads up to the... Kickstarter that we're going to be starting hopefully by the end of this month to get the book published, and people can get all sorts of really exclusive things.
Okay.
John, this is the new way to do things, honestly.
Okay. And here's my next question. How do the people enter their picture? What do they have to do?
I think they could probably just post it on your site.
Our site?
Just go back and look. Yeah.
Or possibly...
your show.
Or possibly even your site, on your site as well. Both sites are available, and then we'll just put them all together and have Roger Kupelian pick out the one that he says, or pick out two. We got two books
two.
That will be given out with his signature inside of each book and your name inside of a credit on this next book coming out. This is great, my friends. This is great, and... thank you, Roger, for getting us the opportunity to even be a part of this contest. That's excellent.
Oh, look, only for you, man. Only for you. I'm not doing it anywhere else.
I love
exclusive
it.
Exclusive to you. You've got a great show. Everyone that's on it loves it. They love what you guys are doing over there. We just want to support it. And well, get the word out.
I appreciate it so much. And my friends out there listening, hey, you guys got to do this. This is great. If you now, you see how I even maneuvered this as a good Armenian here?
I do.
The way I made this happen, it was all for just the Armenians out there and people in Armenia, Armenian descent in Turkey. But now I made it to where everybody can have a beautiful landscape picture that Roger will say, you know what? That could be Armenian. Why not? That could be a battle scene. So,
absolutely.
Again, no selfies with a mountain behind you and no people running around either. This is going to be a nice landscape picture that you could visualize yourself as, you know what? This would have been a hell of a battle scene right here. So that's
yeah.
The main thing that we're shooting for. Roger, we're going to get the word out on this. We're going to get it out, my friend.
Yes, we are.
Thank you, thank you. Let me paraphrase Vartan here, Vartan Mamagonian.
Do it.
Bring it on.
Bring it on. Bring it on. Hopefully,
bring it on.
Well, hopefully we'll have better results than Vartan did. He went down in flames, but he fought like a true champ, you know? That was our guy.
Oh, man, he went down like a warrior, man. He went down like a warrior.
I checked out his book. I checked out his book, Chris. It was unbelievable.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
It was.
Yep.
It makes you proud to be an Armenian, and for him to come out with another edition like this, with all the, it's going to be fantastic. And for us to have the opportunity for this contest, I'm telling you right now, I am really excited about it. Roger, we'll let you know how it comes along. You know, we can't wait.
All right, man.
All right.
Looking forward to it. Let's see those pictures.
Take care, brother. Hey, you guys heard it out there. Let's get these pictures sent to, where can they go to your site as well?
Yeah, they can go to my site and go to your site.
What's your site called again?
It's on Facebook. It's East of Byzantium.
East of Byzantium. Okay. All right.
Yeah, the East of Byzantium book, and they can find it if they do a search, East of Byzantium. They'll see, and it'll be the one specifically for the book. They'll see all the art from the graphic novel and stuff on there. They can check it out. They can order books, which helps us publish, obviously. But once the Kickstarter begins, those special covers are going to go very quickly. So
okay.
We've got less than like 40 left, so they better hurry.
All right. Sounds great. All right, Roger, take care, and we'll be in touch. What a great interview here with Hurach, and then followed up with Roger's exclusive contest that we are having here on this show. Yep. How great is that, Chris?
Man, how lucky are we and all our listeners?
Honestly. And this is only on this show, and you could go on Roger's site and leave a picture there. And you can go on our site, A Toast to Armenia, and leave a big picture of some landscape in Armenia or anywhere in this world.
All landscapes are considered.
Right. And without any faces on it, though, okay? That's the thing about it. It's got to be pure landscape picture.
And remember, it has to be your photograph. You have to have the rights. You
yeah, know, don't
not,
be stealing anyone's picture here, yeah. My friend. That's not how it works. That's not how we're working it here. Anyway, we ran a little too late for Mariam. We'll get Mariam's recipe for next week. And my friends, Kisher Party, Genatzet Hayer, we will be with you next week.
Tune in next week for another episode of
Genatzet Hayer,
A Toast to Armenia with Jano Kabinjian. You can find the show online at www.armeniaproud.com. Or download and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher for Android. This is the Ignotainment Media Network. Kitty.